I'm very pleased now to welcome to the show Doug Schwartz. He's an anthropologist. He's former president of the School for Advanced Research, former chairman of the board of the Jane Goodall African Wildlife Research Institute, and former president of the Society of American Archaeology. And he will be speaking in a lecture titled The Big Pueblo at Arroyo Hondo and the Intriguing Stories It Tells. Thanks for being with us.
How nice to be here.
Good to have you again. So this is an area very near Santa Fe, I mean, basically in Santa Fe. How long has this excavation even been going on? When did you and others start excavating this area?
Well, I started this excavation in the early 1970s, and that's when that work began. A huge pueblo of 1,000 rooms. It took us 5 field seasons to do the work we wanted to do. And then, of course, after you do the excavation, you have a long period of analysis. We found 17,000 bone artifacts, 160,000 pieces of pottery, plus all those 1,000 rooms. So several years of analysis, and then writing, and then publication. And out of that has come 9 volumes of research.
So give us a sense of, first of all, how old is that particular site?
It began at about 1300 A.D. and lasted intermittently. There was one break in the occupation until 1425.
So not really all that long.
No, no.
Where did the people come from who occupied that site?
Well, that's an extremely interesting question, one that's been debated by archaeologists for decades. And one of the things that we were interested in finding when we excavated, and we weren't sure what the answer would be, but on completion of the excavation and the analysis of all the material, it was clear that was a local neighborhood site. That was the result of a lot of small sites in the area coming together. There was nothing foreign about it.
And why did they come together?
That is the crux of the whole story. About 1150, there was a rapid and major climate change throughout the whole of the Northern Hemisphere. This was the
whole of the Northern Hemisphere. We're talking Russia,
exactly.
Europe.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. This is the time, for example, when the great Angkor civilization at Angkor Wat declined. It's the time when the great cathedral building of Europe ceased. Something major happened. And climatologists have found that about 1150, there was a sharp drop in temperature. Temperatures began to decline, and that decline lasted for about 500 years, and the climatologists call the Little Ice Age.
Now, Little Ice Age, I mean, what are we talking about? Were there places that were fertile and bountiful regions that then were too cold to produce anything?
That's the whole story right there. About 800 A.D., 800 to about 1150, the Southwest was perfect for farmers, and the population just exploded all over the Southwest. And where there had been a few little hamlets, now there were hundreds. And everybody was doing great, and everybody was enjoying themselves, and they had enough food, and they were living in these little hamlets of 50 to 100 people. Everybody had enough food. Then about 1150, beginning in the west, in the Grand Canyon area that's most arid, this temperature drop began occurring, and it affected them first. Between 1150, very soon after 1150, there were no more Pueblo sites occupied from the Grand Canyon all the way to Chaco Canyon. Chaco Canyon was also wiped out by this. Then as it progressed during the 1200s, the same thing happened at Mesa Verde. And by 1300, there were no Pueblo occupants at Mesa Verde. What we're saying is for over a 150-year period, the whole of the northern Pueblo Southwest was vacated.
Where did they go?
A key question, and that goes back to your question of where did the people come from who occupied Arroyo Hondo, this big thousand-room pueblo, local. So there's a very serious debate among Southwestern archaeologists about where they went. And there are some who feel you had this big population in the Mesa Verde area, and then all of a sudden you didn't. Therefore, people had to move. But when you look at where they say they moved, like this area, there's no evidence of them. So the other option is that what you had is a major famine. What you also found in the Mesa Verde area, you have all of these farmers living peacefully, and then all of a sudden they began to accumulate in these cliff dwellings, which looks like they're defending themselves from something. Soon after that, everybody was gone. So they were either affected by famine and conflict and die off, or they moved. The evidence for them moving does not exist. So I would say that it's likely you had a major problem with nutrition, farming, weather, and die off.
So people just died in mass numbers. Are there bones to be found?
Well, it's not mass numbers. It's 150 years you're talking about. And you're also talking about not just dying, but a whole series of things. When you have bad weather for small agriculturalists, the first thing that happens is that old people are affected most. And they begin to die off. Then, as things get worse, mothers who are having children have lower weight children, and those children die off. It's not unusual to have 50% of the infants before the age of five died. You're beginning to have a contraction of the cohort of people. Then, as things get worse, and we find a lot of evidence of anemia and malnutrition. So you began over a period of time to reduce the size of the population.
Just out of curiosity, I mean, here you are digging sites that are hundreds of years old. How do you figure out who's anemic?
The study of the bones is very advanced, and we can tell not only that there is iron deficiency anemia as a result of a restricted diet. 75% of the food of these people was corn. That's a narrow diet, 15% from mostly deer, but some other plants, some other animals, but it was a narrow diet.
Yeah.
That does not produce very good nutrition, and that shows up in the flaking of the bones. In one area of the Arroyo Hondo site, we even have a concentration of bowed long bones, which is a clear sign of rickets.
Right.
And if you have rickets, then you have pain in your spine, pain in your back, pain in your legs, which would have made it very difficult for them to do effective farming and hunting.
Let's step back to the fertile and bountiful time before the Little Ice Age. What did the area that is now...
Before the Little Ice Age,
yes. Before the Little Ice Age.
Right.
What did this area that's now New Mexico look like in terms of population and the interaction among the different populations of people? Was it all Pueblo people?
In the northern Southwest, it was all Pueblo people.
And to what extent did they communicate with one another?
Lots of communication. There were peaceful times. There was a lot of trading. There was a lot of intermarriage. There were a lot of small sites. In fact, wherever there was water and farmland, there was a site. The environment was very similar to what it is now, maybe just a little bit more fertile. Maybe the rainfall was just a little bit better and also a little bit more predictable. But these people were farming and living in small communities and interacting with one another.
Were they interacting pretty much peacefully?
As far as we can tell, it was quite peacefully. In this period before 1150, 1200, yes.
I think one of the lessons of all this is that when there's plenty, there's more likely to be peace. And then when there's less food, all sorts of really nasty things come out in human communities.
You should write that down and publish it. It's exactly what we find. We find several periods of scarcity, a word that is used with regard to availability of food. When there's scarcity, there's conflict. When there's no scarcity, there's peace. And probably is a rule that might be applied throughout human history.
Although if you look at today, we, the United States, we have all the food we need, and we still seem to make war on everybody we come across.
That's right. And are we making war on them, or are they making war on us, and therefore we're retaliating? It's a complicated system there. And what is it that they lack that we have that makes them aggressive? It's a much more complex situation than it was back there in the Neolithic and the Stone Age, which is the time of the Pueblos.
So when this scarcity came, I mean, what we have now, a climate change thing, things are basically getting warmer rather than colder, and you see species migrating to cooler climates. So, mm-hmm. for example, a species that worked, that was functioning at a certain altitude has to move to a higher altitude in order to survive. One would think that people would just move south as quickly as possible.
They could. They could have, except for one thing. There were people living in the south.
And who didn't necessarily want any more people.
That's right. There's a almost a universal in linguistics, not quite perhaps, but almost, in which the word for stranger and the word for enemy is the same word. And so if you have a big population in one area, if you also have a big population in another area, so the big population, one of those, is impacted by climate change, and they say, we've got to get out of here. And the other people say, wait a minute, we have developed our community to the maximum use of our resources, but we can't take any more outsiders. Unless you've got some special skill, we don't want you. And they say, well, we've got to come because we're destitute, we're starving. Okay, we'll fight you to protect our land.
Immigration policy.
We keep coming back with these ancient analogies to the present. That's true.
We're talking to anthropologist Doug Schwartz, who will be speaking tonight in a lecture titled The Big Pueblo at Arroyo Hondo and the Intriguing Stories It Tells at the Lensic at 6:30 in the evening. So during the more violent period where there were hostilities over food here in the area that's now New Mexico, what did that look like? I mean, you said people moved into more defended areas like cliff dwellings, but what did the actual, I mean, if this is knowable, what did the conflicts look like?
Well, in the first place, the cliff dwellings were in the Mesa Verde area to the north, prior to the time that Arroyo Hondo was occupied. They moved in, and you see in sites, close settlements close by, real evidence of conflict, real evidence of people being killed, real evidence of massacres. Then that's there. Then when that area is completely vacated and you look at what happens in the area to the south here, you see hamlets, little small villages that people used to live in, which were open and scattered over the countryside, those became undefensible. So they realized they had to give those up. What they had to do was to come together, not in small communities, which were hard to defend, but in large communities in which there were a lot of people and they could be defensive. But it wasn't just a lot of people. They came together in defensive big pueblos. They were fortresses that they built. and not unlike fortified cities in medieval Europe. Not the same architecture, but the same concept.
No moats and turrets, exactly.
No, but big walls.
Yeah.
And gateways.
Now, were people trying to, or, I mean, in this process of stealing each other's food?
We found one kiva that had five people crushed on the floor. The roof had collapsed. There were a couple of these people, the skeletons were disarticulated. There was a separate skull and separate bones. And it looks as if, and there were also big slabs of rock that had crushed some of these individuals. It looks like somebody came in there. This could have been an accident. There's no doubt about that. And archaeology can tell us only so much. But the disarticulation, the fact that these people, men and women, were on the kiva floor, the fact that the roof was collapsed, and after all of this is over, the roof is collapsed, a young woman is splayed out on top of this roof, not buried. So there are evidences like that not only at Arroyo Hondo, but at other pueblos of the same period in which conflict is obvious.
So what's this, when you have that configuration of people, tell us the story of what happened.
The story has to be at some, I've told you the details. If I were to tell you, if I were a fiction writer and I took those details and put them into a story, it would be that these people had been living in small hamlets that were open and scattered over the countryside. And as the climate changed and people began to have less food, they said, this is not working.
No, but I mean the specific thing about the people splayed out and the girl on the roof and all that.
So they came together, they built a big pueblo, and within the compound of the pueblo, there's a kiva in each of these 10 compounds. And as things progressed downward, neighbors, not somebody from the outside, these are people from close by, said, I've heard that they've got more corn in their storerooms than we do. And our children are dying. We have got to go over there and try to, in some way, steal that corn. Maybe the only way we can do it is to kill some of the people that are there. So there's a ceremony going on in the kiva, male and female together, which is interesting in itself. They come in the dead of night, and they throw burning logs down the opening of the kiva. That begins to smoke the whole kiva. They maybe even cover up the hole over. And then the roof beams begin to burn. They've been there for 20 years. They're dry. And the roof collapses. There's a girl that hears all of this screaming to let other people know that there are invaders. They grab her, they choke her to death, and they throw her down this pit on top of the ruined kiva. They steal the corn, and they run off. That pushes the evidence so far beyond what we know. On the other hand, there are bits and pieces of evidence that reinforce each of those steps.
Well, and anthropologists, archaeologists are basically in the business of making stories out of bits of evidence.
Well, there are two kinds. The cultural anthropologist who is studying living people around the world, they have lots of evidence. The archaeologist is looking at ancient places in which there are bits and pieces of evidence, but these archaeologists are, their basic background is anthropology. So they take the lessons learned from those living peoples throughout the world and impose those on the bits and pieces of evidence to come up with a more realistic story. Nevertheless, archaeology is detective work, and you're never quite sure whether the butler killed the shaman.
Right.
Oh, did I say that?
We're talking to Doug Schwartz about the Big Pueblo at Arroyo Hondo. So it must have been incredibly interesting for you and the people you worked with to excavate this site and then find pieces of evidence like the, or pieces of the site like the one you just told us.
Archaeology is characterized with hours of boredom and moments of excitement.
Yeah.
There's so much dirt to move before you begin to find a piece of evidence. And that little piece of evidence is useless unless you also see what is in connection with it, what it relates to. And sometimes it's months later before you can put all of this together and the story emerges. And that's the reason that you dig so carefully and record so much of what you find. You don't let anything get away because you don't know what's important until it comes together.
And there's a, you know, over a century long process of, I suppose, learning that and all the mistakes that were probably made along the way with not regarding certain pieces of evidence.
Of course. And, you know, if you look back at the earliest archaeologists, they weren't making mistakes. They were beginning to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
And we all stand on the shoulders of those who came before us and learn from what they didn't do so that we can get that story more completely out.
Tell us more about the kinds of artifacts that you've found at Arroyo Hondo. Are there, for example, the kind of things that you see in museums, you know, beautiful clay pots and whatnot?
Yes, as I mentioned, we found 160,000 pieces of pottery. So most of the pottery that we found were broken pieces, but we also found whole pots. About 140,000 of what we found was plain ware, the black ware, corrugated or plain ware pottery that they use for cooking and storage. But about 20,000 pieces of pottery, and I'm now just talking about pottery, not the stonework and the feather robes we found and the bear blankets and those things, but as an example, 20,000 of the sherds were decorated. About 8,000 of those probably came from Arroyo Hondo itself. We can tell from the designs and from the mineral content and the clay. But we can also tell from the designs and the mineral content that another 40% came from the Española area. Another 15% came from Galisteo. Another 6% came from Mesilla, Santo Domingo area. So those designs are extremely important in letting us know what's the neighborhood that Arroyo Hondo. But in addition to that painted pottery, we found, as you would imagine, arrow points, spear points. We found a lot of bone awls, those bone tools that are used in two ways, and they're two completely different kinds of awls. Some of the awls for basket working, and they're polished and bright, and some heavier awls that are used for leather working, and they're dark from the secretions of the leather that they've been working with. They're still there. We found needles. We found pipes. As I said, we found turkey feather blankets, and that means that we found evidence of those. We didn't find the whole blankets, but we also found animal skin robes made from deer, made from bear, made from elk.
Now, when you talk about these animals, so you have a little ice age, as it's called, climate change gets colder, the land is less fertile, and so on. Did the animal populations also decline? Did they start eating more animal meat that they hunted?
Well, in the first place, if you start when Arroyo Hondo began about 1300, they are to the south of the area of Mesa Verde that had its major impact. So it was warmer down here. Also, it was a period of very good precipitation. So for the first 35 years, they were living in a pretty good situation. They were near the end of that first occupation, and there were two chapters in Arroyo Hondo. And during that time, they were living a pretty good life. But still, they were focusing on corn agriculture, which was the most efficient way to feed a big population.
What do we know about the religious practices of that time and place?
Not very much, because most of that is pretty ephemeral. But interesting, we did find the skeleton of a 20-year-old man. We found the skeleton of a 40-year-old man who had face paintings on him, and who was covered with a very fine blanket of yucca.
His skin hadn't decayed?
The skin had decayed, but the color had transferred from the skin onto the skull. And that face painting is the kind that you also find in historic pueblos. But we found a 20-year-old man who, unlike most of the population, was pretty healthy. But nevertheless, he was dead at 20. There was a scar across his forehead that might have been a scalping scar. It was healed. But the important thing was that he had all these things buried with him. Eagle claws, the bones of a white-necked raven, which occurs in the southern area, other raven bones, a whole series of things, a piece of mica that was drilled with an awl close by as if the mica had been a hair ornament. It looks like he was a shaman or some other very special person. Now, we also found on
but do we not know why he died at 20? No, or is that not part of the story?
We do not know why he died at 20, no. So it could have been a soft part. It could have been a heart attack. It could have been a
right.
liver, kidney.
Anything.
And that does not show up archaeologically.
Right.
As opposed to a lot of these other people who had this iron deficiency anemia or other problems of that kind. Or all of the children who died probably from malnutrition and complication of nutritional diseases.
So when did this period come to an end?
About 1335, a major new drought came on. And just before that is where there must have been this intensive conflict. Then for a generation, the site was no longer used. About 1375, weather returned, the precipitation came back enough, not as good as it had been before, but enough so that the site could be reoccupied. They built right on top of the old walls, and it looks like ancestors of descendants of maybe some of the same people moved back in to begin to have a second try at this settlement. But it only turned out to be a third the size of the first one. So the environment was not quite as good. It, too, then failed in the early years of the 1400s. It was a big fire at the Pueblo. And finally, the worst drought in 1,000 years may have killed it off by 1340s.
And when did that worst drought in 1,000 years?
I'm sorry, said 1340s. I said 1440s.
1440s. Yeah. Okay. And when did that come to an end?
Well, it's hard to know because the Little Ice Age was still going on when the Spanish came. On the other hand, after Arroyo Hondo was occupied, there were a lot of big pueblos in the Galisteo Basin. But those have not been excavated, so we really don't know that story.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I think about near the end of my lecture is most of these big classic pueblos have not been excavated. When they Are they going to tell the same story that we found at Arroyo Hondo, or is it going to be something different? I can't wait to find out.
Yeah, and then every story has to be reinterpreted when you get all that different data.
Well, that's right. Exactly.
What does this tell you when you're thinking about, okay, we're talking about more than 500 years ago, about our current time where we are going through a real significant and rather rapid climate change?
I think whenever you have rapid change, we have a hard time adjusting to change in any case. But when you have something as pervasive as climate, which affects so much, and we are so interlocked, the people on the Pacific Islands, when the water is beginning to inundate them, they're going to feel it very quickly. But there's no doubt in my mind that the relationship between the climate change and the interconnectedness of the world, we are going to experience some kind of trauma, not of the kind they felt at Arroyo Hondo, but trauma nevertheless as an impact from the climate change.
Which, if we don't watch out, can result in increased violence and hostility toward neighbors and all of those things that happened then.
I think that's already showing up in the world.
Doug Schwartz is an anthropologist. He's former president of the School for Advanced Research. Thank you so much for being with us.
What a pleasure.